The FAA uses 51% and moratorium in the same sentence. What is this really about? I'm Paul Platt, and this is Aero News. Welcome into this Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. My guest is Earl Lawrence, who is the Vice President for Industry and Regulatory Affairs with the Experimental Aircraft Association. We're here today to talk about, and hopefully for listeners, clarify somewhat the moratorium that was announced by the FAA on the addition of any additional kits to the FAA's 51% approved list. This has been widely misunderstood. Earl, thanks for taking a few minutes out to help us sort through this mess today.
Well, I really appreciate this opportunity to sort this out also, and this has been probably one of our number one questions from members, thinking that there's a prohibition against building aircraft right now, and there's certainly that has not been taken effect at
all.
Well,
you know, I've been reading on some of the internet forums some of the comments, and I'm amazed, first of all, that people don't appear to have read this carefully. But I guess I shouldn't be amazed at that. But what I'm really amazed at is the sources of some of the misinformation appears to be manufacturers. Let's talk about what the moratorium is, because a lot of people said, oh, man, I just decided to go experimental amateur built with my lawn ornament, and now this. Well, this is not, first of all, a moratorium on getting your kit inspected by a DAR.
That's absolutely correct. The FAA in their publication, you know, I understand, not everybody reads the Federal Register, not exactly exciting reading, but they were very, very careful when they released this to specifically state that they said right in there, this does not affect the sale, the design, or the certification of any amateur-built aircraft right now. What they were saying is, well, we evaluate our procedures. We don't want to add additional aircraft onto the 51% list. And what does that really mean? I mean, what's this 51%? There is no requirement to be on a 51% list. In fact, most manufacturers, unless you happen to be Vans Aircraft, who can get inspections very readily, most manufacturers actually produce air kits for a couple of years before they can get somebody from the FAA to come out and give a blanket approval. The whole idea of that checklist isn't a requirement, but the FAA looked at it as, geez, we've got DARs out there or inspectors going one by one aircraft, making an evaluation. Let's make their life easier. So once there's a large amount of a particular maker, you know, a model of kit out there, why do we do 1,000 evaluations? I mean, we know there's lots of RVs, you know, 6s, 7s, et cetera.
Right.
Let's just stick them on a list and say, don't worry about these, inspector. If you've got one of these things, you know the kit qualifies, where you don't even have – it makes their life easier. So it doesn't prevent anybody from getting anything certificated, but it actually makes life a little bit harder for the FAA in the meantime. And because now they have to, if it's not on the list now, they're going to have to spend a little bit more time making an evaluation.
Well, now the only people who are really affected by this are people who are trying to bring new kits to market, or who have in the past couple of years brought new kits to market and have been waiting to get them on the approved list. The moratorium is on the list, not on the inspections of the kit, and certainly anyone can introduce a new kit at any time. Let's get to what this is all about, though. To get on the approved list, you needed to demonstrate that the kit you were marketing was provided in a form where, if completed according to manufacturer's instructions, it would impose 51% of the tasks of fabrication and assembly on the builder. Is that a nutshell?
That is a great explanation. It really does explain it well.
Okay, and so why is this a problem? I understand some of the controversy surrounding some of the fast build kits and so forth and the builder assistance programs. Why was the 51% approved list an issue?
Well, again, where the FAA's concern was, is they wanted to put a notice out to everybody saying, we're in the process of changing how we determine whether a particular kit qualifies to be on the list or not on the list. And so they wanted to put that notice out there because they were concerned that they would have some – they might be presented with something that's very, very close, you know, possibly would not qualify as to be built by an amateur. You know, mm-hmm. that the majority wouldn't be left for an amateur to complete under their new criteria that they're looking at. So they said, hey, hold off until we finish putting out this criteria. And now on top of that, they said, we want this criteria to be looked at by everybody. And that's one of the good things they've said. They said they're going to put that criteria out for all the builders out there, anybody who's an enthusiast in there, and you can comment on there and say, hey, looking at this criteria, this new criteria, what concerns do you have on it? Is that an accurate reflection on meeting the 51% rule? We say 51% rule. The regulation actually says the majority portion is built for education and recreation. Mm-hmm. And what the FAA is struggling with is, you know, that's a – how do you – what tools do you use to make that determination and to give a consumer some sense of confidence that when they buy a particular kit that they're going to qualify for that amateur-built certificate in the end. So it's something helping out the average builders out there.
Well, and the majority, or 51% as it's come to be known, has differing interpretations. Now, the FAA has been pretty clear over time in talking about it as a task list, but I have seen internet postings from kit makers, people who are selling kits, mm-hmm. who are talking about it in terms of time. Or, you know, I suppose there are interpretations where you could say, well, I completed 51% of it by weight. I mean, that's not where it ever has been. And this seems to be, you know, my experience is a lot of the gray areas in aviation regulations are really not gray. It's just people don't like the black or the white, so they make it gray.
Well, I think you can certainly say that on a lot of things. In this particular case, the FAA has consistently, since 1982, used the tasks, as been said. And a task is build a wing rib. Okay, that's a task. Mm-hmm. And we've used tasks all this time because how do you measure time? I mean, and is that a reasonable way to determine whether somebody amateur built an aircraft? I guess that's the question we're trying to answer. Was this aircraft built predominantly in a non-professional fashion, mm-hmm. for one's individual's education and recreation purpose? Okay. That's what and that's a really difficult thing to say. And some kit manufacturers are proposing that, why don't we use ours? Because even the best craftsman in the world isn't going to finish this thing. And I think the real point when people are referring to ours is really think of it from the builder. And I think this is really what the core of the whole thing. Let's ask the builders, and this is one thing that EAA is now asking. There'll be a notice out and asking builders and people that build aircraft to write into the FAA and let them know. Do you feel like you were an amateur builder? Did you build enough? I mean, did mm-hmm. you build the majority portion? I mean, that's the key question. Is this the FAA is concerned about this just being a way around type certification, okay? And the core question is did you feel when you built the thing that you really had to build the thing, that this was a tremendous amount of work, that you did the majority of the construction of that aircraft? And, you know, that's a difficult thing to do, but I think with the input of everybody out there, we'll be able to determine that. But you're right. Tasks have always been the way that the FAA has used to make that determination, because hours can be different for so many people. One task may take one person 100 hours, and it might be 3 hours for another person because they've got better tooling and they've done it a lot.
Well, you know, I think back to the pages of the magazine where you see what our members are building and restoring. And you see the story of the guy who bought his RV3 in 1994, and he's just getting it done. You know, it didn't take Vans, 15 years to crank that thing out.
Right.
And so I'm not sure years, whatever, or time or hours, whatever, be a reasonable thing. We're talking today with Earl Lawrence, who's the VP for Industry and Regulatory Affairs for the EAA. And we'll be back in a moment with more. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Diamond's DA-42 Twin Star is General Aviation's ultimate flying machine. Fly fast with the confidence of a twin for the cost of a single. Go direct over water or rugged terrain and cover great distances in the first and only piston aircraft with an advanced airframe, avionics, and engines. The DA-42 gives you options you've never had before, including the Garmin G1000 and known ice protection. Go where you want, when you want, fast and for less. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design for a number of reasons. Clarity Aloft headsets are known for the superior clarity of sound. They're lightweight but rugged enough to meet military specifications. Best of all, they boast better noise reduction than ANR in the speech frequencies that matter most to you. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
Welcome back to this Aero News special feature. I'm Paul Flagg, talking today with Earl Lawrence, Vice President of Industry and Regulatory Affairs for the Experimental Aircraft Association, trying to clear up this 51% moratorium mess that we've been reading on all the internet forums today. Earl, I want to move on to talking about the committee, which was co-chaired by you and Dick Van Grunsven of Vans Aircraft, and also involved Frank Paskowitz of the FAA. This was formed, a year and a half ago, and has been considering this, and it's only recently the moratorium has been put into effect as the committee's recommendations get set to be implemented by the FAA. But let's talk about exactly what the committee agreed on. And I want to go down the bullet points one by one and let you comment on them.
Okay.
FAA directive and advisory language for the airworthiness certification of amateur-built aircraft does not adequately address the issue of commercial assistance in excess of that allowed under the regulations. Now, this sounds like it's pointed squarely at some of the builder assist programs where you book a plane ticket, get a motel, show up with no tools, and walk out in 2 weeks with a completed aircraft. Am I getting that correctly?
That's what the concern is. It's documenting what's happening after it leaves the kit manufacturer. This and several of the other points, and we all actually, and we had a representative of a builder's assistance program in these meetings because, assistance is not against the regulations. Mm-hmm. It's just assistance over 49.9% is not within the regulations.
Right.
And the key is, you may have a kit. This is kind of the problem is kits have gotten so complete now that when you take delivery of them, there really isn't any room to hire anything out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Whereas before, there was a lot more room, you could hire a lot more people out, and there's been a lot of concern that the consumers, and this is where we go back to the advisory circular material and the information out there, just don't understand what they've received and what they can and can't do, because you go out there and you talk to the sales folks and you talk to different people. And of course you want to get help. You want to get education and so you can build your airplane the right way. So what's the difference between education and hiring somebody to build your airplane? And, those are the kind of things that we dealt with. And we agreed with, we need additional advisory material. We need better definition on that. For example, going to an EAA Sport Air workshop to learn fabric covering, that has nothing to do with hiring somebody to build you an airplane,
mm-hmm.
but it's certainly something that's a good thing. That's part of your education, et cetera, and going back and then covering your aircraft in two different things. And we wanted to make that clear and also make clear to the consumer what they've purchased and how much room, what can they hire out? Because it's been common, for example, that you could hire out painting your airplane.
Mm-hmm.
And that was been one, I think that it has been well understood that, painting your airplane is not required for airworthiness, so the FAA didn't count that in the tasking. So hire anybody you want to paint, and there's no penalties there.
Okay. There's a bullet point here about needing more updated forms to accurately reflect who actually performed the fabrication. That's kind of a no-brainer. But the aircraft kit evaluation process is not standardized. The public, industry, the FAA, and individuals within those groups have different opinions about what level of fabrication and assembly constitutes major portion. Is this aiming at saying, okay, well, put these two rivets in the right wing. We'll build the rest of the right wing and the left wing, and that counts as a builder task.
No, not so much. That comment is really focused on and the issue that when kit evaluations are done, they're done by various individuals with various amounts of training and experience in doing these evaluations, okay? And they're just not the same. So a kit manufacturer in Tennessee may have something signed, you know, that individual giving that evaluation will say, no, your kit doesn't qualify, you're going to have to take more things apart or do less. And then a kit that at least appears to be a more complete kit is signed off and approved with flying colors in, you know, Washington. And it is agreed. Nobody wants to have this inconsistency. You know, the kit manufacturers don't want to have it because, you know, obviously for competitive reasons, they want the same rules for all of them. Mm-hmm. From the consumer side, this is confusing as heck. What do you mean that one makes it and this one doesn't?
Right.
You know, what makes it, what doesn't make it? How do I get a clear, concise, consistent answer? And interestingly enough, the agency agreed with that too. I mean, and that's how this stuff started. When the very first checklists were put together back in the 80s, it was a national designated team that did the evaluations. So in a way, we're going back to how all this started.
Let's talk for just a moment about where this is all going. The press release from EAA says that the FAA will develop the final method of calculating major portion. The method will be made available for review and comment, and the FAA will consider petitions for rulemaking by committee members or any other interested party or person. Now, does this mean that it'll be a process initially that does not go through the NPRM process, and that to change it or, you know, adapt it in some way, we can submit petitions for rulemaking? Or will this whole thing be done through a petition for rulemaking now?
Okay, this is actually not rulemaking. One of the things, and I think this is really important and has been misconception out there, everybody agreed that the amateur-built rule as a rule is good. Don't touch it, okay? Don't mess it up. Because touching it, we may end up with less privileges than we have now. Okay, that, and everybody agreed to that, all parties. So the rule isn't changing. So therefore, there will be no NPRM because we're not changing rule. We're not doing rulemaking here. Mm-hmm. The issue is policy. Now, policy is how FAA implements a particular regulation. That's theirs. They own it. Okay. Now, once it reaches significant, quote, significant level, don't ask me how they determine that, but
right.
But everybody agrees that this is a significant level. How to evaluate whether a kit qualifies. They do put it out there for public comment, but again, it's the FAA's document. These are internal decisions and guidance, okay? Mm-hmm. So they own it. And, you know, we were very happy to see that the FAA stated in their NPRM that they were going to put it out there for all of us to comment on it because they don't have to. So it's going to be look like from most people who don't work government relations like I do, like an NPRM in the sense of they get to see what the FAA is proposing to do and they get to write in and say, I like this, I don't like this, or, you know, whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, the press release says the FAA will consider petitions for rulemaking by committee members or any other interested party or person. Is this talking about actually changing the regulatory wording of the rule, or is this just applying to the policy, not necessarily to a regulation?
Well, I think in this case, my understanding of that is they are referring to what we discussed in the ARC. One of the things we discussed is, don't change the 51%. Don't change the amateur built rule. But we think, hey, to be real, there is a large amount of public demand to be able to build an experimental, call it custom built, call it kit built, whatever you want, but a aircraft which doesn't have to meet the 51% rule, like we have with ELSA. Right now with an ELSA, there is such a thing as experimental light sport aircraft. 90% of it can be done by a kit manufacturer. You can buy it, you can build it, no problem. Just has to meet the requirements of an LSA. They would like to see something like this because we said, hey, people want to hire additional help. It's just a fact of modern life.
Well, and it's kind of in the interest of safety in many cases.
It can be, and that the argument is it really in the interest of safety, or really should you go get a type certificate and a production certificate? You know, is this really aircraft manufacturing? And that's where the discussion is. So when we're talking about additional rulemaking, one of the things that was presented, and EA presented in the ARC meeting, so rulemaking committees, is we said, hey, you have an existing category called the kit category that confuses everybody. They think that means amateur build. It's not. It's a separate existing experimental category. We said it's not being used right now. Why? There's a list of reasons. We can get into the technical reasons, but why don't we revise that in a way that, you know, Vans Aircraft and others who are all supporting, you know, who are supporting this idea, tweak that so that they can provide a product which people can get more than you know, 49% assistance on it.
Right.
Just, you know, legalize it. You know, do you mm-hmm. want to fight it, or do you want to put a regulatory structure around something? And that was, you know, kit category was created was finalized in the very early 90s. It was EA originally started this project back in the 80s with Paul Poberesny suggested this, and now we worked on it, and we have this existing category, but it hasn't worked out because the restrictions on it for the kit manufacturers have been, in our opinion, excessive and not really necessary. So, that's when we were talking on the rulemaking committee changes, we're looking at change that rule, because there is a rule that allows you to have a more than, you know, 51% assistance, and let's use that, but let's make it practical.
Well, I guess bottom line then, if someone is in the process of building a kit and was expecting to get it expected for airworthiness this spring to fly it this year, they don't have to be concerned about the moratorium in this case. That's strictly for getting things on the pre-approved 51% list. But down the road, we could be into a lawn ornament situation here, could we not, with people who've bought kits which will not qualify under the new 51% requirements?
Possibly, but that's, you know, the FAA would be making a huge mistake if they did, and we have advocated, and the FAA has been very careful when that issue comes up, because absolutely, if you look at anything the agency has ever done in with rulemaking, is you don't go back. You know, and I think this is true not just of the FAA, but other government agencies. When you do rulemaking, you don't go backwards, okay? And we got to write in. People need to be aware of this. But EAA is going to go down fighting on this one. Is that those people who have taken delivery of kits? You've taken delivery of the kits. You did it under the FAA. Put out a publication saying, you know, that's a compliant kit, and you can build it, and therefore it qualifies for the amateur built rule. And, you know, I don't think they're going to go over that line, but we've got to be vigilant on there to ensure that the FAA doesn't go over that line. The real issue is going to be people who purchase new kits after the information is out and the new criteria is available.
All right. Well, Earl, listen, we appreciate your helping to clear this up because, again, a lot of information is just plain wrong that we're reading out here in the forums on the internet and hearing in private conversations. So hopefully this will settle people's minds somewhat. We'll hope to talk to you again next time one of these things comes up.
Well, I look forward to it.
Earl Lawrence is the Vice President for Industry and Regulatory Affairs for the Experimental Aircraft Association. You can find out more about this issue by looking for the press release at the EAA's website at www.eaa.org. You've been listening to a special feature from AeroNews. You'll find us on the web at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your weekend and have a clear and unlimited day.